Brendan.
Hello, Alan.
Not a Thing podcast, in effect. Hooray!
We did it again.
We did it. We're not starting over. We're not messing up. We're not...
So far.
Re-recording. Right. As far as the listeners know, anyway...
Yeah, talk to me in 15 minutes when we've been running for a while.
Well, for our guest's sake, I really hope that we're on the ball, and that's kind of the big deal this episode. It's episode 4 or 5. I should really look at that number before I do this, because I feel like I do this every episode.
Yeah, but if you get it wrong, like, who's going to call you on it? Nobody.
Right. Yeah. Except for when we get that 100. That one's kind
right.
of a big deal.
Yeah, that one we want to make sure we're on the right one.
So without further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest, Uday Gajendar.
Hello. Hello, hey, Alan. Hello, Brandon. How are you?
Oh, we're doing okay.
Glad to have you.
Good. Thank you. Great to be here. Glad I could be your guest for this evening, and hopefully I can live up to your podcast standards.
Well, if that's your bar, that's pretty easy. So
have I already exceeded? Okay, good.
Oh, we're gonna be great. This is gonna be a great show.
Perfect. This is my first podcast, so yeah.
Oh, no way! Really?
Yeah. First time ever. I know. 2014, and it's my first time. I know.
Well, have you ever heard a podcast? Or is
oh yes, oh true? Yes. I've heard podcasts. Yes. I've
okay.
Participated in one. Yes.
Not part of the action.
Right.
Cool. Well, hopefully it's a positive experience for you.
Yes, I'm sure it will be.
So Uday has been an acquaintance of mine, a friend of mine, a friend of my wife's previous jobs. I've probably known you since, 2004?
Something like that. Probably 2005, because that's when I joined Adobe.
Oh, well, it was definitely after that. Good point.
Yes. Unless you had some kind of powerful foresight capabilities. Yes, I think it was 2005. That's when I met Julie at Adobe. One of the six Julies, I think. Five Julies.
At
least that many.
Still Alpha Julie.
Right. Exactly.
Right. So continuing the theme from last week, my wife does rank first in that list of Julies.
Of course. For both personal reasons and professional, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Team Julie, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, as far as Julie rankings go on the podcast, we affirm that Julie Meridian is number one.
Yes, I completely concur with that one.
Right.
I've always been very much an admirer of Julie. Both of what she did at Adobe, really fantastic work on Photoshop, and of course her creative pursuits. I've always been enamored of that, very much an admirer, and what she's doing now with the paintings, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty rad.
Go Team Julie.
I was told recently that I am not the number one Brendan by former guest and listener of the podcast, Joe.
Oh no.
Brendan behind Brendan Fraser.
Oh wow!
I take umbrage with that.
Well, that is a tough one too.
I never made the Mummy 3. Although I also never made the Mummy 1. So
right. By the way, whatever happened to Brendan Fraser?
Exactly.
Since the Mummy movies, right? Like, he kind of disappeared. So
right. Yeah, who has
when
a podcast?
You make the Mummy 3, that's
I
what
believe
happens.
You do. You yeah. have a podcast.
Yeah. Right.
I know where I am. I'm here.
Right. So that's a funny thing, right? You, Uday, we opened the show and you were like, you're glad to be here. We actually record the show kind of in various places. So
nice.
I'm in San Jose, Brendan's in Sebastopol, and you're in...
Sunnyvale.
You have a new place, right?
A new place, that's right. Beaming live from a relatively new 3-bedroom, 2.5-bath townhouse with, and I must point this out, Brazilian cherry hardwood floors, which are incredibly gorgeous. And if you ask any of my good friends, I have somewhat of a fetish for the Brazilian hardwood floors. Sustainably farmed, of course. And
of course.
I'm a fan of a good Brazilian.
that, that's always fun too. Of course, yeah. Of course.
Well, I'm glad we caught you with internet.
Yes. It got a little scary last week calling out the Comcast guys to do the move from my old place from Menlo Park to the new one here in Sunnyvale. But, you know, they had that two-hour window promise or guarantee. And, you know, 2 hours is 120 minutes. Around the 100th minute is when the guy showed up. Okay. And, all right, you know, they got in the window. And, you know, he did it, you know, got it all working just fine. And everything worked A-okay. So I have been – let me knock on this Brazilian hardwood cherry floor here. Knock, knock. It has been working 100% flawlessly. So.
Excellent. Good, good. That's what we like on the show. Yes. Working. Yeah. Right, Brandon?
Oh, yeah.
So let's kick in with the hard-hitting question, yes. the stuff of the show. Uday, what's your thing?
What is my thing? Well, you know...
Or what's a thing?
There's so many things, right?
Yeah.
Well, the big thing for me is startup user experience and designing for the startup environment, designing not only kind of the culture and the strategy and the vision, but also designing a discipline of crafting high quality products right within a startup environment. That's been my new thing for now. As you know, Alan, you know, I recently left Citrix after a lengthy career, my longest stint ever, almost 5 years there as principal designer. Had a fantastic time, accomplished everything I wanted to do and more. So many amazing opportunities there I never foresaw, including fun business class trips to Sydney, Australia. That was quite quite amazing. I think I actually tapped out at, like, was it four trips last year? Yeah, I think it was like four trips. It was crazy. I actually spent, like, literally, because each one was like 2 weeks, so two times four is 8 weeks. So I spent like 2 months in Australia last year. Crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it adds up, right? All that kangaroo meat, it just kind of adds that protein. So I definitely gained a lot of protein and weight on that one. But anyway, this really cool new opportunity opened up at a big data startup called Cloud Physics. That's cloud and physics combined together into one beautiful, harmonious word. and what's really interesting is when this opportunity came up, you know, I mean, people have been talking about big data all the time, right? It's all over Twitter and Facebook and you name it, right? It's a big meme, right? At some point, you get kind of sick of it, right? And part of the reason I kind of joined is, oh, my God, I'm so sick and tired of hearing about big data. You know what? Damn it. I'm just going to go to a big data startup and design the best freaking big data experience ever. And then nobody's going to talk about it anymore because I've already designed it. So that was kind of the impetus for me to make that leap, a little bit of a leap into the unknown. I've never done a startup before. Despite having lived in the Bay Area for, wow, almost 13 years now. You know, I've always done the big company route, mm-hmm. and I figured, okay, well, why not? You know, the environment seems right in terms of the funding and the capital situation and so forth. All right, yeah, let's try it out. So, met with the CEO, who reminds me very much of Mark Templeton. We had a lovely dinner last night in Tamarine, or at Tamarine, the restaurant Palo Alto. Rhapsodized about design. We rapped about design too. I won't go into the rapping part, but yes, we did talk about design and humanity and emotion and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, he asked me point blank, so Uday, why did you join Cloud Physics? You know, can you talk about, you know, what really brought you here? And I said, well, really, it comes back to this personal mission of mine. I mean, yes, you know, I kind of, you know, joked a little bit about, you know, getting a little tired about hearing my big data. But for me, it really is that mission of how do we bring beauty and soul to big data, you know, beyond the quantification aspect, that beyond analytics, but really make it this elegant, soulful kind of experience of the machinery and the data of cloud computing infrastructure, you know, which puts most people to, you know, bored in tears or whatever, right? But, you know, I got to believe there's something there, right? There's something really powerful and amazing and emotional to that. So that's the challenge I've set up for myself, and that's the mission that's been kind of driving me forward. So that's what kept me, or has been keeping me up Oh, pretty much every night for the last 3 months, as you see my night shift tweets. Yeah, so it's been quite a ride.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, for those that don't follow Uday on Twitter, he's Udanium, and we'll link it afterwards. But always look for hashtag, is it hashtag night shift?
Night shift, right.
And then.
Not to be confused, by the way, with apparently a brand new NBC show called The Night Shift. At first, when I saw that, I'm like, oh my God, I've finally made the big time. I'm finally.
I'm
I'm
trending.
trending.
It's, oh my God, I'm trending. But no, unfortunately, it is about hospital workers working the graveyard shift. So,
Oh, okay.
yeah. But apparently,
Would
they
they
have
not
wonderful
call it?
romantic interludes and all that kind of stuff, but you know, whatever.
Would they not want to call it the graveyard shift if it's in a hospital? Seems like it's kind of sending the wrong
Yeah, right.
message.
That's a very good point, Brendan.
This
Yeah.
is when we kill everybody.
Well, it does have a certain zombie aesthetic, I guess, if we go with that motif, but yeah.
Again, not a thing you want associated with hospitals, right?
Right. So, yeah.
The other hashtag is UX drink, which
Yes.
I highly concur with, although I don't necessarily follow my drinks for with regards to UX. Actually, here's the side conversation. What you drinking?
Right. Well, I am actually having a Colorado Breckenridge bourbon.
Nice.
It's quite nice. It's made with snow melt from the Rocky Mountains, like 9,600 feet or whatever. I love how it's like emblazoned on the bottle, right? Snow melt. It just creates this image in your mind of like this, sweet, purified water from heaven that's just like, distilled into the bourbon. And what's interesting, I mean, I love the flavor of it. It is sweet. It's got a nice vanilla notes and so forth. Apparently it beat out Pappy Van Winkle and some recent like, bourbon tasting tests and so forth.
Well, it's probably because you couldn't find Pappy Van Winkle
Yes,
because of the
exactly.
theft and the cost and stuff. But
Right. So I think the victory is by what do you call it, forfeit or default? We couldn't find Pappy,
default.
so right. I actually put my name down on a waiting list for Pappy Van Winkle at Beltramo's in Menlo Park, which I highly recommend. Listeners want to go check that out. I think they do an excellent service of keeping up some very nice fine spirits. Unfortunately, the Pappy Van Winkle, of course, nobody can find it, but I'm on the waiting list. I think I'm number 2048, something like that. So, yeah.
Well, if you don't mind paying some exorbitant rate per drink, they have it at Single Barrel, so you let me know.
Well, we might have to do that someday. Well, let's again knock on that Brazilian hardwood floor for cloud physics, and hopefully we'll have a wonderful financial event.
Yeah, Brendan, what's your podcast drink for the evening?
Water.
Oh,
Well, so somebody's got to keep it clean and straight, right? So that's
here. Okay.
And usually it's not me, so
Yeah, right.
I don't know what's going on.
No problem. No problem. I
I
will.
needed some hydration. It's warm today.
Yes, it is. I will pick up the slack. And I'm still working my way through a Four Roses single barrel, and it's
Nice.
good. It's good. It's right on.
Good. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Okay, so
I
we'll
also
come
feel
back
like I
to.
did enough drinking this weekend at a wedding with an open bar
Whoa.
where they had a scotch tasting.
Wow. Super
So,
nice.
yeah, some Oban 14 year is pretty good.
Very nice.
Yeah.
The Hakachu
Oh,
Japanese
yeah.
scotch. I guess I don't know how they can call it scotch, but I guess it is.
It's yeah, that's a little funny to me. You
Yeah.
know, let's table this only because I know Uday and I would go like off for like, you know, the rest of the show on it. So let's hold
Right,
it for at
exactly.
least a little bit longer because I did
Sure.
want to touch back on one of the things you'd said about bringing. I mean, I totally get you wanting to bring beauty and soul to stuff. I feel like that absolutely is like your mission statement, like kind of period. But
Sure.
one of the things that you mentioned was that you're trying to build in like a discipline to startups. And I wanted to hear more about that because I know from just personal experience, one of the biggest things that's hardest to rein in is that discipline, because one of the things that makes a startup is that, like, fuck you guys, I'm going to do my own thing kind of approach to how a company works. So tell me more about the discipline aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. Look, startups are based upon that principle of move fast and break things, right? As I say at Facebook, right? And I'm just going to do it my way and, you know, let's see what happens, right? Well, when I've come in, when I came into Cloud Physics, which, by the way, I should point out, it's a startup that's been around for about 2 years. You know, it's you know, received, you know, Series B, I think Series C funding now. I'm not too keen on all the funding strategies and so forth, but, you know, it's a fairly, you know, mature level kind of startup, right?
Oh, okay.
And, you know, it's not just five guys running around, you know, it's you know, about 20 people, running around on skateboards and stuff, right? It's about 20 people.
Scooters these days.
Or scooters, yeah, that's right, yes. with an X, right? Zooter, or whatever it is. I mean, these are, you know, professional veterans of enterprise software industry, folks from VMware, Sun, Google, and so forth. So a lot of deep industry expertise, PhD data scientists, some of the smartest, sharpest people in the Valley, I think. So the level of discourse is quite up there, you know, quite high level. But in terms of the discipline, getting back to your question, here's what I've been trying to establish, you know, having a sense of a vision in terms of how do we take all these abstract principles about, you know, what we're trying to do in terms of big data analytics, virtualized infrastructure, and so forth, how do we translate that into something that is beautifully expressed as a vision, as a concept? What are the principles behind that? How do we parlay that into a strategy that we kind of section out on a quarterly basis, right? You know, back at Citrix, we always talked about horizons, right? H1, H2, H3. So what are those horizons? Obviously, shorter timescales, given the startup nature. And then how do we form that discipline of not just, hey, Uday, I got to have an icon. Hey, Uday, I need a graphic. Hey, Uday, we need a, oh, my God, right? I mean, it gets a little crazy, right? You know, having a discipline of, okay, what's the problem we're trying to solve? Who is this really benefiting? How does this benefit the company? And also almost going through a Socratic questioning process for each of these requests so that we can truly deeply understand what is the value of it. And then, does it make sense, you know, kind of a go, no-go decision, does it make sense to actually translate this into a design vector, right, or design, you know, kind of process? Although I should mention, I actually avoid using the word process. You know, it smacks of bureaucracy, right? It sounds heavy and... oh, process, you know, how I loathe the, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? So, you know, I try to lighten it up by talking about, okay, it's not about process. Okay, maybe not lighten, but I shift the tone. It's not about process, it's about discipline. It's about having a rigor and a structure.
Gotcha.
And, you know, I think we've talked about this before back at Citrix. I'm very much enamored of the Navy SEAL model of, you know, having focused elite teams who are highly trained in their craft of, you know, execution and delivery and so forth, getting in, doing what they got to do, and then get out swiftly, carefully, and deliberately. And so that's what I mean by discipline, right? You have that sense of rigor, you have a sense of pride, you have a sense of let's get things accomplished in a way that has deliberate impact. And
yeah, it's
a big
kind
part
of like it's internalizing the reasoning behind, you know, the thing that you're doing. So it's
exactly.
Not so much like, you know, you have to tell me, you know, X, Y, and Z that I have to do. It's like, I will figure that out, assuming that I, like, grok why we're doing it.
Yes, exactly. Back at Citrix, you know, I performed what were called big think sessions, and I brought that here to Cloud Physics. We've had a couple of attempts at that. Still trying to figure out a way to formalize that mechanism. But the idea behind the big think is really asking those big questions, you know, what is the fundamental question we're trying to answer? What are the fundamental themes? You know, like pick three or four words that really represent the essence of who we are, what we're trying to do, the benefit, the value prop, and so forth. And then how do we translate that into something really meaningful, really actionable, right? And it's kind of dangerous because you ask those questions, you know, it gets a little uncomfortable. It's like, why are we doing this? What is the point of this? And I thought Bob said we're going to do that, and then Sally said this, and Fred said that, and, you know, things can get a little bit testy, a little bit, you know, doesn't always happen. But what does happen is you realize that there may be a diversity or a set of conflicting values or perspectives that everyone held, because like you said, in a startup environment, people just kind of want to do their own thing, right? And so it kind of brings that out in the open, so we can have an open debate about that. So that's a really big part of that discipline. How do you bring those tensions out in the open and then rationalize them so we have agreement about where, how to move forward? So
that probably works towards having kind of a more kind of, I'm not sure what the right word is, but the more kind of aligned team, right?
Like, yeah.
Everybody knows what it's about. And if you're the kind of person, or not you specifically, but clearly yeah, not yeah. you, but if you're the kind of person that's more like, you know, this is just a gig, you're gonna feel out of place. You're like,
you're
around people that are passionate. You're around people that are invested.
Right. Right, exactly. And I think it is that passion and the totality of that passion, right? And how it all kind of converges together, and just making sure we all converge on the same spot, right?
Right.
And then kind of moving that forward. I also want to mention that with design discipline, which I want to compare against, you know, a culture of design thinking, you know, which is what we did at Citrix, and of course is still going on. With design discipline, it's less about the training and workshops and the lecturing and all that kind of stuff. It really is role modeling good behavior. So on day one, you know, I walk into the cloud physics office, and of course I'm shocked to see no whiteboards. I'm like, where are the whiteboards? they have glass walls and glass tabletops, and they kind of write on those, but there's no whiteboards. And I'm like, oh my God, I need a whiteboard. I'm used to, I get all twitchy. I gotta have a whiteboard. So I just like rummage around, and I find this giant, you know, the giant sticky sheet paper pads. So I found that like in a storage closet, and I just ripped those giant sheets and plastered them on the wall to make a makeshift kind of whiteboard. Sure. And so whenever there was a discussion or a feature request or whatever, I would just go right to, go right to those sticky sheets and just start drawing, just start sketching, right? And what resulted is, you know, a week or two later, that's what other people started doing. They would just actually go to those sheets and just start drawing stuff out or writing out the equations, or, you know, starting to externalize those internal thoughts and debates, right? Which I thought was really cool. You know, it's like you just got to do it. You just got to act it out, right? So, yeah.
No, that's entirely like a thing. There was a speaker we had at a design salon. some stuff. So one of the things that Uday had spearheaded was to bring like speakers from, you know, various places to talk about kind of aspects of design or things related to design. And so one of the ones was and I'm trying to remember who this was, and I know I'll think back and I'll find it. It's whoever wrote Moments of Impact.
Oh yes, Lisa K. Solomon.
Lisa Solomon, right? Okay, so her thing was about, or she had one line which was like, "He who controls the whiteboard marker controls the meeting."
Yes,
it was something to that effect, and it's like if you're talking with people and you're in a meeting and you're the one writing on the board, everyone is looking at you.
Yes. So
you dictate the pace, you dictate the topic, all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, it kind of puts it on people to be, I have to be ready to kind of stand up in front of people and just be the person writing on the board. You don't necessarily have to be, have all the answers, but just because you're the one like holding the pen, you literally are in control.
Yes. Absolutely. I totally agree. There's something remarkable about that, holding that whiteboard marker, you know, which is a little bit like Harry Potter's wand. I mean, you're just like, you're holding, you know, the dragon tail thing, whatever it is. And people will somehow, they direct their attention to you. They listen to you. and it creates a certain dynamic. Now, also, as you remember back at Citrix, you know, I led these three in a box sessions, getting design, engineering, product management all together, and I'm starting to practice that here. Of course, you naturally have to in a startup, where I'm trying to get, you know, engineers to take my whiteboard marker and go up to the board and start sketching it out, you know, writing out their ideas and whatnot. So that leadership in this sense, and this is the other thing that's kind of a thing for me now, it's like, what is leadership, right? It's like, oh my God, I'm a director of user experience, but what does that mean, right? I mean, yeah, I got the title, but okay, am I like dictating? Am I lecturing? What am I doing, right? And I find a lot of the times I tend to be coaching and teaching and facilitating and exerting, I guess, what might be termed implicit leadership, and other times explicit leadership, where I may have to, you know, be a little bit more aggressive, right, dictating things. But I try to facilitate as much as I can, because I want to make sure other people feel like they can take charge and feel empowered too. So
you're not wandering into the office in the white dress uniform with the sunglasses. Not all the time, anyway.
No, not all the time. Not all the time. There may be sometimes, but not all the time.
Cool. I'm wondering, did you see that article that I'm pretty sure was in the New York Times magazine, kind of ripping apart the myth of disruptive innovation, was kind of like the subtitle.
So I did see that this morning. I briefly skimmed it. I do have a bookmark to deeply like read that later. I'm definitely very interested in studying it. Did you read it?
Yeah. So not only did I read that one, what was hilarious, okay. So someone, actually, Chris Arkenberg, Chris23 on Twitter, another friend of ours and guest on the show, retweeted the post about that.
Okay.
What was really funny was a different friend of mine, Jürgen Holst, of all people, he tweeted that an article that came out of Slate, which was talking about that article. So I had actually bookmarked the New York Times one. But what was funny was the Slate one was kind of being, gave a summary of that article and was kind of being snarky. And I thought what was really hilarious is the New York Times article is ripping apart Clayton Christensen, I believe.
Yes. Yep.
Who wrote a book, The Inventor's Dilemma.
Yep. Yep.
Talking about how disruptive innovation is the new kind of thing in terms of how progress works and stuff like that.
Right.
And then New York Times was kind of like, you know, it's not a great book. I mean, the short form was, there were a bunch of things about it, but disruption is kind of too much of a buzzword right now. So there's a bunch of other stuff wrapped up around it. But what I thought was hilarious was Slate was giving the summary of this article, Slate, which I think is one of maybe the longest running online magazines. That really disrupted the print business, which is what the New York Times magazine is kind of about. But anyway.
Right. There's a little bit of irony there, I guess. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. No, I can't wait to read that article.
Doorbell is ringing, so we'll be right back while I try and make that stop.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
Sure.
Don't worry. I'm going to write down where we are on the show.
Stop pressing it. That'll stop it.
Okay. Yeah. Hang on.
We're back from a brief interlude, which you did not hear because it's going to be edited out.
It was only a minute this time. It was not 12 minutes like last
time. I totally blame you, Alan, not because it's at your house. But because you said at the beginning of the show that there wasn't any problems.
Oh, my God.
And there you go. Tempting fate.
Didn't happen in the first 15 minutes, but...
No, you're right. So we were talking about the article about disrupting, and that was somewhat
speaking
disrupting
of,
for the show. But in any case, I know. I just wanted to get your thoughts on it in general. I mean, one of the higher points in the article, which I think... is reasonable and a good thing to talk about is, I mean, there's lots of kind of disrupting technologies and disrupting innovation in the news. There's so many things, and it has become kind of like a really a buzzword about about how like change works. But one of the best things about it is, or in the article, which I think both the New York Times and the Slate article agreed on, which is the disruption of kind of, or disruptive innovation does bring about change, but it doesn't predict anything.
Right, right, exactly. And that's really the big thing, right? Because I think there is a confusion of concepts around innovation, what innovation represents in terms of the kind of change and the scale of change you're trying to effect and impact. There are scales of change at the very kind of microscopic level, and then the macro to the, you know, cultural and platform strategic kind of levels and so forth. But then there's confusion around those concepts with guaranteed returns and results, right? And the prediction of something will happen, out of which you will gain monetary value or some other kind of societal value or whatever it is.
Right.
And, you know, innovation does not guarantee success, right?
Yeah, so basing your business model around busting shit up is maybe not the best idea.
Right, exactly, exactly, right? I mean, yeah, you can bust shit up, but it's like, for what cause and what benefit, what value? And frankly, is that particular context ready for it? You know, I mean, let's go back to the Newton. When the Newton came out, right, that was supposedly disruptive innovation of, you know, portable computing. But it failed for lots of different reasons, technical, social, commercial, et cetera. It got resurrected as a Palm Pilot, which was a huge runaway success, and eventually got superseded by other devices and so forth. So, you know, a lot of it's very contextual. It's very historical. I think that there is... And I'm not an expert in this space, but, you know, I think it's like, what is it? Is it Hegel? Hegelian kind of historical evolutions, right, across time and in the periods of time. You know, there are certain, what do you call it, critical incidents or triggering incidents that happen. And there's a bit of a cyclical aspect to that for how and why those incidents happen and the permutations after the fact and so forth. So there's a little bit of, like, I don't know, political, historical, social aspect to it, which I think technical innovators and entrepreneurs forget about while they're trying to create this really cool, crazy thing using, you know, all, you know, the latest, like, you know, technical wizardry or whatever. So
yeah, one other piece in the articles was that something could be disruptive without change actually happening.
Right. Right, because either A, no one really heard about it. It's kind of the tree that fell in the woods and nobody heard it. right, and then there's just society's just not ready for it, you know, for whatever reason. So, and that's just part of life, you know. Yeah. So, but I definitely think there's definitely way too much disruptive flavored Kool-Aid going on, and we got to, like, stop that because – at some point, you just got to stop and think. Like, you got to reflect, right? What is the benefit? What is the value of this? And
right.
Again, getting
what
back to the scale. Right. What's the scale of change? What comes out of it? Yeah. So.
Something that's not quite disruptive, but coming back to an earlier point, quite lovely and tasty is there's definitely a trend recently towards more whiskey.
Yeah.
This is something that I've like kind of slowly noticed over the last kind of few years. And so I did want to catch up with you because we never actually did about your whiskey tasting boat ride.
Oh, yeah.
So please, I need
That's
to hear this story. Right? Right. Brendan, right. You have to hear this story.
Yeah, this is fantastic, right? So actually, just to go back a few years, right, a long time ago, back when I was at Oracle, the VP of design at the time, he and some of the senior managers and so forth, they were talking about this whiskeys of the world, you know, kind of exposition and so forth. And at that time, it was held at the Nikko Hotel in downtown SF. And you get, like, you know, really nice buffet spread and a room at the, you know, at the Nikko and all that kind of stuff. It was really pricey at that time, you know, for me, it was just, you know, a little too much. But over the years, I was thinking about, wow, whiskey of the world, you know, I got to try this, right? And so officially kind of came on, I saw the ad for it, and it happens on a boat, this time no longer at the Nikko Hotel. and it is on, shoot, I forget the name of the boat now, but it's that, it's the one that's always at that harbor, Pier 7 or something like that. So, I decided to go ahead and buy the tickets, just try it out, see what happens. I did book a hotel room, just knowing, what's going to happen, sampling all kinds of different scotches and whiskeys around the world. I never know. And they do offer a full spread. There's tons of food. It's kind of hearty food. I mean, they have like an actual full meal, so you can have like turkey and meatloaf and all this kind of stuff. And then there are platters of just cheese and salami and stuff like that. And also gallons and gallons of ice cold water. I've never seen so much water ever. It's like, am I in a desert in Las Vegas? No, I'm on a boat,
On
with
a
lots of water.
boat.
I'm on a boat. And you board the boat, and it's like three stories. I think it's quite well, decked out, and it is just jam-packed. It's basically it's like a conference expo kind of thing or trade show, right? So all these booths are there by all the major, whiskey vendors, right? You got Jameson, you got Bulleit, you got Makers, all the you got Yamazaki, Glenlivet, everybody, they're all there. And it's obvious that certain ones are bigger than others. They pay top dollar for certain spots, certain locations, right? And yeah, you get a free little whiskey tasting cup, and you just go from booth to booth, trying out the different whiskeys. And it's just jam-packed. It's super hot, super crowded. I think there was like 300 people there, if I last recall. And you're just sampling away all kinds of stuff. And I got to tell you, after, I don't know, this is about five or six, maybe seven, I couldn't taste it. I couldn't feel my tongue. I mean, I was just, I don't know what I'm tasting, but I'm sure it's really good because my nose worked fine, so I could smell it. It smelled
Sure.
great. I just couldn't taste anything at that point. I'm just like, I don't know. I'm just like burned out, literally burned. And they do recommend, like, have a sip of water, have a bite of cheese. But nobody's doing that, right? Everybody's just like sloshing away, like, oh my God, I gotta, It's like, it was quite the evening.
Awesome.
And I did have to take moments where I had to kind of go out onto the balcony, just get some fresh air. It gets hot. And yeah, I saw folks. Oh yeah, that's right. There were folks dressed up full kiltie Scottish gear, right? And I thought this was the most touching was like fathers and sons, right? Because it's like a family tradition. They've had certain scotches and literally in generations of their
Oh,
household,
right.
or whatever. I thought that was really touching how, they're introducing their son or grandson or whatever, obviously legal drinking age, to enjoy some really nice spirits. And it's like, wow, that's pretty cool, And the topper of the evening was, or the ender was, a kiltie marching band. So that was quite nice.
That sounds like a lot of people going commando.
Yeah,
Because
that
that's how you're
thought
supposed
did
to
occur to
roll
me.
with the kilt.
Right, that did occur to me.
Yeah, the only
I
kilt joke I know in that kind of vein is, do you know what a Scotsman wears under his kilt?
nothing.
The
Not a thing. I don't know.
answer is your mother's lipstick.
Nice. Nice. All
Anyway, by the way, I am not Scottish, but I do have a kilt. Just
Oh,
saying.
wow.
Just
Nice.
saying.
Nice.
Anyway.
Well,
I am, and I am, and I don't have one.
Well, I attended Carnegie Mellon University, which is founded by Andrew Carnegie, a total Scotsman. And it is, I think, the only university in America that has an official kiltie marching band. And so at graduation, they have the actual kiltie marching band actually comes
Awesome.
out. And they do the bagpipes and all that kind of stuff. And I believe you can get a degree in bagpipe music
Ding.
at Carnegie Mellon. Well, there you go. It's like, hey, somebody's got to do it, right?
The more you know.
Exactly. Exactly. Maybe a little too much, but yeah, highly recommend it. If you ever get the chance, Whiskies of the World, I thought it was a fantastic experience.
I
So.
know they do, they're expanding to do kind of smaller events. They just did
Yeah.
something at San Pedro Square Market down here in San Jose.
Right.
I unfortunately was out of town for both the Whiskeys of the World thing and the thing, or the Whiskeys of the World boat tour and the San Jose thing. Otherwise, I probably would have been over both of those. But there's something really nice about tasting really, really just any spirit in kind of comparison. I love being able to taste the subtleties because they are so kind of strong and dominating kind of flavors. So if you have them, you like if you have one and then like the next day have another one, it's going to be very difficult to put those together. And any place where you're going to have like two of them right next to each other, you're probably getting drunk. So it's nice to have kind of a structure around actually tasting them.
Yes. I would say that the drawback to it is, of course, you've got literally 300 people, like a total mosh pit of whiskey mayhem, and so it just kind of it kind of dilutes the experience, so to speak. I wish it was a little bit more fewer people, or if they did some way like you could kind of manage it a bit, because otherwise you feel rushed and you're just kind
Sure.
of like, hey, I'll take that, yeah, just kind of sloshing away.
Hey, that's a valid style too.
That's true. That's true. Hey, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah,
Yeah.
we have to start a brown liquor club. That's what my
Nice.
sister did. She and her friends did wine club, and so they would all bring a bottle of wine and do this. And then there was this small offshoot of a small group of them that did brown liquor club, and so they would all bring a bottle of like whiskey or scotch or bourbon or rye or
Nice. Nice.
whatever, and then taste off of that. I think they all stopped. I'm gonna say because all of them had kids.
Lighting.
Although at the same time, I feel like drinking might be better for them, but I don't know. I'm not gonna say that. I don't have kids. I don't want to say that, but that's a thing too. We should definitely do like a brown liquor thing. That would be good.
I second that. I yeah,
I do
love
every week.
Nice.
Rad. Well, it is give or take a minute or so that I may, have to edit out. We're right at about like, 45 minutes. So I wanted to like quickly like thank you, Uday, for being on the show.
You bet. Thank you. It's been an honor. Loved it.
Thank you for joining us.
You
Yeah,
bet.
the time, like we were saying, just kind of slips away when we have a guest, so we love it. It
Yeah,
really,
awesome.
really
Awesome.
worked for us. So I wondered, I don't know, is there anything you want to promote or anything you're working on that we should let people know about?
Only that I'm designing some pretty cool stuff at Cloud Physics, which will be unveiled at actually VMworld later this summer. So I'm looking forward to that. I think that'll be pretty exciting to see that out in the open in the wild. And I think there may be some stuff that's going to be pre-released a little bit earlier than that. I was supposed to be working on a couple of books that got a little bit postponed. So I've just been so busy. And of course, I'm continuing to work on my blog posts. Hopefully, we'll be presenting at some conferences and so forth. So I'll be keeping up all of that.
Yeah,
But
say your blog's name. I'll link it, but
My blog is called Ghost in the Pixel. Ghostinthepixel.com. And yeah, I've been working on that for about 5 years, 6 years now.
is that an anime
So
reference?
it is indeed. To I don't know how you found that out, but yes, it is to Ghost in the Shell, one of my favorite anime flicks. And yeah, it's all about that hidden ghost of the soul within designing, digital interfaces. So yeah. Some pretty cool stuff. A lot of deep reflection, but I try to lighten it up with some colorful language and stuff like that. So yeah.
That's right in our wheelhouse.
Excellent.
Awesome. All
Cool.
right.
Well, again, thank you for being on the show.
You bet.
I hope your first podcast experience was a good one.
Yes, this was really nicely done. Thank you so much, Alan and Brandon. Really appreciate it.
Cool. We'll have to have you again on soon, maybe once that book comes out, right?
Yeah,
We
there
can
you go. There you go. Awesome.
Cool. Well, Brendan, we're still marching to 100. We'll get kind of some more fun stuff between now and then, and then yeah, I will catch you next week.
Till next time, Alan.